Welcome back to Agriculture Today. I'm Sarah Moyer, here to discuss the State of Food Security and Nutrition in the World report. It was an annual publication that was released earlier this month, and the UN's Food and Agriculture Organization, more commonly known as FAO, and other supporting organizations published this for the public, for researchers and people in this area. And here alongside us to help interpret the messages within this large report, we have K-State agricultural economist and director of the Feed the Future Innovation Lab for collaborative research on sorghum and millet, Tim Dalton. Good to have you along.
Thank you, Sarah. Great to be here.
And there's a lot contained within this report, and we'll circle back to discuss K-State's role. And as far as the messages go that are within this report, what are some of the top priority ones that you interpreted?
Great, Sarah. That's a good question. So every year, about the middle of October, the FAO releases their annual report on the state of food insecurity in the world. So it's an annual update on the trends and what are some of the major issues that are affecting food insecurity and hunger around the world. And so that occurred just last Monday on the 16th of October, and that coincided with the World Food Day. So I guess I was a little bit surprised by the message. I thought that there was a lot of positive trends in where we were moving in reducing hunger and food insecurity around the world. But the key message that was put out was that the numbers increased from approximately 777 million in the previous year up to about 815 million people around the world that are affected by food insecurity. So that's about 11% of the global population. And while that number is trending in the wrong direction, it's also good to note that a decade ago, we were well over a billion people, 1.1 billion people. So there is long-term trends in the progress, and this is an uptick, a blip in the world. And so the key messages that came out of the report is that there's really three driving factors that are affecting these numbers. And despite the fact that commodity prices have been low, and that should be good for food consumers being able to afford more food, it just didn't play out that way. I thought that was going to dominate the issue. But there's really three major issues that are affecting global food insecurity right now. There's just general economic slowdown around the world. We're in a booming economy here in the U.S., but around the world, it's a little bit less of a story. So fewer people are getting wealthier, and they're increasing their incomes at a slower rate. So that's affecting how much food they can buy. Commodity prices across the globe are low. And so nations which are exporting oil and other commodities to the global markets are not earning as much money, and that doesn't provide enough cash so they can go out and buy food commodities for their populations at the same rate as they had in the past. So that's a second issue. But the third main issue, which is a really difficult one for us to get our hands around in the field of agriculture, is that there's been an uptick in a lot of localized insecurity around the world. And so these are not border wars between nations. These are non-governmental or what we call non-state insurgencies that are taking place in places like South Sudan, in Nigeria with Boko Haram, in the northeastern part of the country, in Somalia, al-Shabaab, Yemen, we hear about the insurgency there, of course, in Syria, which is on the news, and that which spilled over to Iraq. So these are really some of the major forces. And kind of the maddening part about this last human-induced issue of food insecurity is that it's estimated that about 489 million out of the 817 million that are food insecure live in these areas. And what's even worse about it is that of those that are under five, those that are severely malnourished, children that are stunted, the 122 million, about 75% of them are located in these conflict areas. So that's the human-induced side of food insecurity that is very difficult for us to look at. And I think we're much more attuned to drought and insects and too much rain. But, humans are difficult animals to deal with.
And trying to perceive what to do moving forward. Of course, there are some goals set by the FAO and partnering organizations that have set some benchmarks for where to go moving forward. Of course, the trends with human interaction and some of those conflicts are harder to calculate in as agriculturalists try to make progress. But where do you see some of the effects that have been going on in agriculture or the progress? How are those influencing some of these numbers?
So good question, too. I think I'm going to break it back and just kind of, even though that last point was kind of a little bit not the most optimistic situation, I just wanted to kind of tie it off with a good example of where once peace has been restored, how things can change really dramatically. So back in the 90s and 2000s there in Uganda, in northern Uganda, there was a rebel group, the Lord's Resistance Army, which created a lot of havoc throughout the whole northern part of the country. Agriculture just was not going anywhere. Crops were stolen and livestock were stolen. Populations were displaced from one region to another. So you just couldn't settle down into agriculture. And the entire population was dependent upon food relief to survive. And that situation has cleared up. That band of rebels has been pushed back into oblivion or pretty close to it. And at this point in time, there is no need for food relief. So in the past 10 years, stability has emerged and has stabilized the region. And now that they are completely free of any need for food relief and food aid. So the key thing is that just that stability is really critical for pushing those numbers down. And so if we could think about sort of an optimistic world where these conflicts didn't exist, well, you can imagine that a good chunk of that 489 million people could emerge out of that food insecure situation. I guess there's a couple of messages. One, in those types of world, it's the U.S. plays an important role in terms of how we interact with nations and international organizations in trying to establish peace. So peace is a big piece of this. Sorry about the pun on words, but it's really critical. And so the role that we play in international affairs is just an important element in global food security. And then secondly, there's still a chunk of individuals out there who are living in the very dry areas of the world. So they're living in the western Kansases of the world and even drier areas into the rangelands of the further west without irrigation that rely upon crops which are heat and drought tolerant. We think about South Asia, where there's even, because of El Nino and La Nina effects, there's too much rainfall. And so we are looking for rice crops that are submergent tolerant, that can overcome being flooded up, you know, above the tops of their shoots and still, as that water recedes, survive and grow. So there's an incredible scientific effort that needs to be invested in, one, improving crop yields, but secondly, becoming more resistant to heat and drought, to then submergence. And then there is a whole series of pests which are important, insect pests and weed pests. So reducing the damage associated with those pests in general is an important topic that we can work on. And the key message there is that we share a lot of the same needs and research here that the rest of the world needs as well to face some of those challenges.
Many complexities going on, but breaking that down, it does make it seem a little more achievable. Some of those agronomic practices that you mentioned, those types of improvements, how do they show that the economics behind those can become more stable or less of a downturn as we've seen in the past year that you mentioned?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of different elements to food security. One is local availability. Producing enough on your own is really the front line to food security that allows surpluses to be marketed in local communities, and that keeps prices low. So a lot of times there's food insecurity, food's available, but it's very expensive. And when you're spending 75% of your income on food, once that price doubles or even it gets 50% more expensive, you just don't have enough money to have enough food. So the front line is local food availability and producing enough for yourself and having sufficient amounts to market so that your neighbors can afford food locally. So a lot of the agronomic practices that we're looking at in terms of, you know, wheat being more heat tolerant and drought tolerant so that we can stabilize and improve yields in western Kansas are the same issues they're facing in India and Pakistan and the Punjab. And the same thing with milo production in western Kansas with drought and heat affecting yields there. That's the same issue we're facing in the sub-Saharan countries of Senegal, Niger, Mali, Burkina Faso, into Ethiopia, where those are the number one food crops for a lot of these populations. So really three areas, two commodities, one systems, and then one post-harvest lab. Kansas State has four of these labs. There's 24 across the United States. The only other university in the U.S. is the University of California, Davis, which has five of these labs. So we're very proud to see in the past 5 years that we've come on so strongly and we've netted more than any other university in the United States. And our profile is being very highly elevated in this area that we're working holistically across commodities as well as across systems and storage, reducing storage losses.
We're going to take a short break, but when we do come back, Tim and I will discuss K-State's role in moving the needle and, as you've been alluding to, how some of these projects overseas or in these countries struggling with issues related to food security can reap some benefits for the producers back here in the States and in Kansas. Once again, this is K-State agricultural economist Tim Dalton with us talking about the state of food security and nutrition in the world. The report was released just a couple weeks ago, earlier this month, and we'll be back here on Agriculture Today.